Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
That's right, we are. We are the Next Fan Up podcast. We are the podcast by the fans, for the fans. And yes, we are finally pretty much on the eve of real football. You are listening to our usual recap show, although we're not going to be recapping these pointless, you know, fourth preseason games. What we are going to be talking about is all the monster trades, cuts, re-signs, waivers that have just gone down over the weekend. I am joined here by my nemesis and friend, Monty, the Raider superfan. How's it going, Monty?
Wonderful, man. It's the autumn wind. Beyond the autumn wind is the Raider, and the nights are getting colder. It's time for the season to start.
And I'm also joined by my other favorite frenemy on the Next Fan Up podcast, and that is Andrew, our Jets superfan. How's it going?
Yeah, I got to say, when you started off saying my nemesis and my friend, I was about to cut in there because I thought you were talking about me. but I guess I'll just have to settle for second billing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we'll see how things go. You know, we're going to get to this towards the end of the podcast, but we may not be hearing you as much, so I'm sure you're going to try to get even extra words in edgewise here for the next hour or so.
That's how I do, Nick.
All right. Well, let's jump right into it. I mean, obviously, there's been a flurry of activity, but I think, hands down, the biggest move that we saw here was the Vikings trade for Eagles quarterback Sam Bradford. They give the Eagles a first-round pick next year and a fourth in 2018 that can escalate to a second if they win a Super Bowl, and I think a third if they, I think, get to the NFC Championship. Huge trade, obviously, and it was, you know, obviously, you know, a desperation, you know, fill-in move when once they heard that Teddy Bridgewater was going down with a serious knee injury that, you know, honestly could linger beyond, you know, the full season and couldn't perhaps imperil his future. But it's obviously a win-now move. There's a lot of interesting angles on this, but I'm going to toss it to you, Monty, first. What do you think of Sam Bradford and the price?
I think that's kind of the going rate for a quarterback. I mean, I think everyone kind of had sticker shock when you saw that it cost a first round and fourth escalating up to a second, which I'm sure they'd happily pay if they made it to the Super Bowl. My opinion, Sam Bradford is an average quarterback, and last year the Vikings, you know, made it to the playoffs and almost beat Seattle with an average quarterback. So Adrian Peterson is not getting any younger. I think I'm in the minority here, but as a fan, I like it when my team pushes their chips into the middle of the table and makes a go for it. So I know on the Slack group most people were saying it's insane and ripping the Vikings apart, but from where I'm sitting, the Vikings and their fans consider themselves a Super Bowl contender with an average all they need is average quarterback play, and I think that's exactly what they got. So first-round pick's a little bit steep. Vikings probably be picking in the late teens or 20s. So I don't know, man. I think they got a good shot to make the playoffs. Whether or not Bradford excels in a new environment, we'll see. But I don't know. I kind of like it. I like the move. You've got a team. Their defense is awesome. Their running back is all world. So I say go for it.
Yeah, I love it in a certain sense because they are going for it, and it's clear that this roster is ready. You look at the defense from top to bottom, the front seven, the secondary. They're probably the deepest secondary in football. I put it among that. They have Captain Muller, and Munnerlin might be their fifth cornerback. And then they get a guy in Bradford who, I mean, I'm not saying anything crazy here when I say that I'm not a big fan of his, and I don't think, and that's why there was such a reaction when the trade was announced. But that's the going rate for a quarterback these days, especially when you're desperate and the rest of your roster is Super Bowl ready. You're going to have to give something up, especially when Philadelphia all offseason has maintained that Bradford is their starter. Even when they took Wentz and Bradford was upset, a lot of people just thought it was they were sort of appeasing Bradford and they were placating him by constantly calling him the starter. But they went through OTAs and training camp and the preseason with him as the starting quarterback, and then just at the last week of the season, they give him up. And yeah, Bradford is a definition of average quarterback. He sort of has the same profile as Bridgewater in that sense. I think Bridgewater's better than Bradford. I think he's and he has more upside. I think that that Bradford has had opportunities and he hasn't really made the most of them, but he'll have the best running game he's ever had, and he'll have an improved group of receivers with Stephon Diggs and Laquon Treadwell, and maybe Charles Johnson finally steps up this year. And again, they're not going to have to rely on him so much, but it was imperative that the Vikings do something, because there was no way they could justify going with Sean Hill into the new stadium, and when the rest of your roster is so clearly ready to win a Super Bowl. They just couldn't justify it, and the fact that they're so stacked from top to bottom also allows them to give up that first-round pick, because their roster are deeper than most. They could sort of be able to handle that loss.
Yeah, I mean, to me, from the Vikings' perspective, the price tag is obviously high, but I equate it sort of kind of like what you and Monty were saying, sort of going rate. It's sort of like the Texans overpaying Brock Osweiler. Yes, I mean, the price is too high for the quality of the player, but that's just what you have to do, particularly if you are a team that has a playoff-ready defense and a lot of other good pieces, but you're just really missing that quarterback.
But Nick, you know who didn't have to do that? all offseason, we were talking about it, how the whole Ryan Fitzpatrick thing, why aren't they getting him signed? They should just give in to him. They should just do it. And all offseason, I maintained that what McCagnon was doing was the right thing to do. And it sort of popped into my mind, like, what if Ryan Fitzpatrick was still a free agent right now? You know, like, well, how much would Minnesota have paid him?
And again, I think that, you know, to my point, when we've been arguing about this over the offseason, my point was that it was just playing with fire, letting him hang out there for so long. Because to your point, if he was still somehow unsigned when Teddy went down, you know, you'd be at best in a bidding war with the Vikings, but basically the Vikings would throw whatever, you know, they'd throw a blank check at him.
Possibly, but Denver was in a similar situation. I mean, I guess they did take the first round quarterback, but he's not ready to play. But Denver was in that similar situation, and they didn't want to touch him. So again, I just think it's an aspect of the thing here is that I don't think Ryan Fitzpatrick is as good as maybe you do or a lot of other people think he is, and as valuable as people think he is. And they gave him $12 million for this year. And for a reference, the Eagles are paying Sam Bradford an $11 million bonus this year just for coming to OTAs in preseason, because the Vikings only have to pay 2 years, 24, which is his base for this year and next year. So they get a good deal. They get a guy basically the equivalent of a Ryan Fitzpatrick contract, which, I mean, I'd probably rather have Sam Bradford than Ryan Fitzpatrick, so I guess that's a good deal. And especially since it's a two-year deal, it allows them to buy time with Bridgewater if he's not healthy coming into next year.
Yeah, I mean, just a couple more points on that is just that thinking about Sam Bradford in Minnesota, I mean, all the, you know, we mentioned that strong run game, good defense, all that is definitely true. What I sort of wonder about how well he's going to be out of the box, though, is in that the two things that I think Bradford has struggled most with on the two teams he's been on, and the reason why I think he hasn't developed it to like maybe the height of his potential and maybe never will, you know, fit his top billing in that draft, but it was because, I mean, he was in places where they were constantly turning over coaching staff. He never got settled into a single system, and he always had bad offensive lines. He kept on getting injured. Now he's going into a place where he's going to have another shaky offensive line, and he's going to have to learn a new system with literally a week to prepare for week one. I mean, at best, I think you have him, you know, settled into that system halfway through the season. Granted, I mean, he can just hand it off a bunch, but, I mean, how much can we really expect out of him, given that he's just being thrown in there?
I think two things there. First off, this is the best defense that he's had. I mean, the Rams, all those years where he was wasting away at the Rams, I kind of discount that, because that team was terrible. They picked number one overall, picked Sam Bradford, and didn't really give him much else to work with. As far as coming to the Vikings, you're right, he's not going to be asked to do a lot. You know, like, the defense is going to keep them in every single game. He's not going to have to take chances. He's just going to have to play conservative, take what the defense gives them, and the Vikings should be in all of those games. I just think that from the Vikings fans' perspective, they don't have to throw him in week one either. The biggest concern with Sean Hill, he's a serviceable backup quarterback, but given his age, they don't think he's going to make it 16 weeks. So now he can run all of September. You know, you've got an insurance policy. If he gets hurt, you got Sam Bradford who can jump in. but Sean Hill should be able to start week one. He could probably do week two and three, depending on how things go, and just ease Sam Bradford into it. From a fan's perspective, you want your team to try to win, and I think that's what the Vikings
do. Yeah, just to get some information. So the Vikings open up the season at Tennessee, and then they're home for Green Bay, and then they're at Carolina. I would probably put the latest that I expect to see Sam Bradford is the Monday night football game against the Giants in week four. That game is in Minnesota. Because the interesting part about it is that when I read about the trade was that Vikings tight end coach Pat Shurmur, who, if you may remember, was the offensive coordinator in St. Louis with Bradford. And also he might have been in Philadelphia there also. But all I know, they have a history together. And Pat Shurmur was also the head coach of the Browns, who got fired after 1 year. And apparently his approval of this deal was went a big way into sort of making the front office and everyone around them be okay with Bradford being the starting quarterback. Again, this is a move they had to make. And it makes sense for both sides, especially Philadelphia's side, which I'm sure we're going to get to soon.
Yeah, well, just to open it up on the Philadelphia side, we touched upon a few of these points already. It's just that, we'd been all of the NFL media had been sort of scratching their heads at or mocking the Eagles for basically just investing a ton of resources in the quarterback position. But maybe they've now found it because they traded away Sanchez. They've now traded away Bradford and gotten a decent amount there. And then they used also, obviously, a lot of capital to move up and get their guy of the future. Maybe the lesson here is you just stock up on all the quarterbacks just like as soon as the offseason opens, just like use all of your marbles to get all the quarterbacks and wait for teams to get desperate.
Right. It's funny because I was thinking about that because when I used to play Madden and build a franchise, it was very easy to sign big-time free agents. But the thing that always stood out to me was that I was eligible to trade these guys, right after. So I just spend the money, and then I trade them for draft picks. And I'd be like, that's kind of just buying draft picks. And that's kind of what they did here. They sort of bought a first-round draft pick for $11 million to have Sam Bradford be in training camp with them. And that brings up another point where the draft was just announced this weekend. The draft is going to take place in Philadelphia. And since Philadelphia gave up their 2017 first-round pick to move up and get maybe week one starter Carson Wentz, they weren't currently in the first round. But now they are in the first round. Howie Roseman even mentioned that at his press conference. He was like, yeah, we're back in the first round of the 2017 draft. Didn't explicitly say, oh, look, we're in Philadelphia, but you have to think that might have been just a small part in the decision to get a first-round pick. I mean, obviously everybody wants a first-round pick, but it gives the Eagles fans something to cheer about next April.
And I kind of expected Nick or Andrew to kind of the overall theme of this trade was that the Vikings got fleeced and they're desperate and they're making, a stupid bonehead move. But, I think one of you, because I like the move, I think one of you should throw out at least some of the major themes that the Slack group is coming out. I mean, I know the Green Bay, the Packers superfan and the Bears superfan are ecstatic about this trade. Davey walked a couple steps back away from the ledge after Sam Bradford came to town, but I think the overall sentiment is that the Vikings made a bad deal, and I think we're kind of in the minority from that perspective.
I think these guys, it's not that they think it's a bad deal. You just don't think Bradford's good, and I don't disagree with them. But I don't really think they had any other choice. I really think Bradford was the best guy they could have gotten. Like, a lot of people were throwing out names like Mark Sanchez or Geno Smith or like those type of guys, and those guys have absolutely no chance. I'm sorry, no chance of leading them to the playoffs. I think Bradford does have a legitimate chance just because they're even all these years later and all that money that he's brought in. There's still somewhat of an unknown quantity with him, and we're going to find out because he's surrounded by all the talent in the world right now. So we're finally going to learn if this guy is a bust or not, because right now, people might not say that because of all the money he's made and how high profile he's been throughout his career, but he really hasn't done much since he won Rookie of the Year his first year in the league.
Well, I think the argument against it from the Vikings' perspective, aside from the fact that a first and a fourth, which could be higher – for a guy you don't think is a good player. I mean, that's just expensive for a guy who's not a good player. Two things is that if you don't think that the Vikings are as good as they think they are, if you think that the Vikings, because we've all just been on this assumption that they can make it to the Super Bowl with what they have in average quarterback play. But I mean, I think if you're down on them, you look at like, okay, they're just throwing more bad money into this. Like, you know, they're selling off more of their future for the, you know, but they're actually more than one or two steps away. And look, you know, and the other point in here is that honestly, I think Teddy has been a bit overestimated in this discussion as well. I mean, he was good but not great. And he may be coming back at some point, but I don't know. I mean, I feel like other than Adrian Peterson, I mean, who are the veterans on this team that give you this kind of short veteran window? And how far has this team gotten, you know, recently? It's not like this was, you know, I don't know, the Patriots or the Steelers were like, this is obviously their year. They were knocking on the door last year and then, you know, and then they fell just short. I mean, they couldn't hardly put, They scored 3 points in the playoff game? Granted, like, you know, a super, super cold game and a kind of a crazy, fluky game. But I'm not down on them as much as, like, Pod. I don't hate them. But I do think they've been a bit overestimated. And if they weren't going to make real noise in the playoffs this year, even with Teddy, then they're selling away a bit of their future for maybe getting back to the same spot. And if this doesn't hit off, if they miss the playoffs, and this is a huge misstep.
Yeah, and I think a point that needs to be made again is that you mentioned the first round pick they gave up, and they're mortgaging their future. I think, again, I'm never advocating of trading first round picks for quarterbacks I don't think are really that good, but I think if any team could do it, it's them, especially because they have accumulated 9 first round picks over the past 5 years. And that roster is so loaded. It's just that defense is young and it's talented. I look at every level. There's not a weakness on that defense. They have the edge rushers in Griffin Robinson and Danielle Hunter. They have inside guys with Sharif Floyd, Lidball Joseph. I like Tom Johnson. Then at linebacker, Anthony Barr is one of the most unheralded players in the league who you're going to hear about this year. And Eric Kendricks, who's a second year player who I really liked coming out last year, and he's going to start at middle linebacker. And then in the secondary, they have 5 cornerbacks that are starting caliber in Xavier Rhodes, Terrence Newman, Trey Waynes, who was the first round pick last year, who has really shined this preseason, Captain Munderland, who was a very good nickelback, and then Mackenzie Alexander, who's a nickelback but was slid in the draft a little this year. I believe he fell to the 3rd round because of his lack of ball skills. He had 3 interceptions in the preseason. And the ball skills was the one thing that people were concerned about of his coming out of Clemson. And he looks like he's going to have a big role. So their defense is stacked, and it's just about getting a quarterback to be able to just be competent. I mean, we saw last year what Denver did. I understand that Denver's defense, and again, this point has been made so many times this offseason, but like, Denver's defense is one of the best ever. But They had Peyton Manning playing at a really, really below average level last year. If Sam Bradford could just be competent, I think that this team has a shot in today's NFL, where it seems like good quarterback play is coming harder and harder to find.
The only other thing that I'd throw out there for the Vikings, I think that 4th round pick that they traded came from the Dolphins. So I think they still have theirs. And also, it's not like they can't trade back up to get into the first round if there's a guy who they think is their guy. I mean, you watch Kevin Costner, you see how it's done. You can get some draft picks.
Yeah. That lovely documentary that was Draft Day taught us a lot about how it works. I mean, my last word on this, just again, like, in I don't know whether it's devil's advocate or what, but on, like, kind of the against column of this trade is that, you know, the way that they were set up is to have, you know, Teddy Bridgewater to be in sort of an Alex Smith-like quarterback who's not going to wow you on many plays, but is just at least not going to turn the ball over, is going to keep moving the chains. And I'm just not sure that Sam Bradford is that quarterback. I mean, his stats last year was 19 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. That's not the sort of, you know, safe game manager you can expect. Granted, it's going to be a different offense, and he's going to have a lot more of a running game to lean on, but that's the other factor that I think that people don't bring up as much. Just because they're not going to be asking as much out of him doesn't mean he's going to be that guy.
Sam Bradford owes his entire career to handing the ball off to Adrian Peterson when they're in college together. So maybe Maybe he's got the formula, man. I just give the ball to Adrian Peterson and get out of the way.
All right. Well, we do have to talk about a few other teams this week because there were a lot of other moves, including some trades. You know, I always find it sort of fascinating, the teams that are able to pull off trades of guys that they were going to cut anyway. You know, the Chiefs had a couple of guys that we traded. We traded Marcus Cooper to the Cardinals for an undisclosed pick. We traded Rod Streeter, who we picked up off the street this offseason, for what has got to be like the lowest compensation I've ever seen, which is that, you know, we switched, so it was a swap of conditional seventh-round picks in 2019 with the 49ers. I don't know why they didn't ask the 49ers just to, like, Venmo John Dorsey $5 and to save everybody a lot of time. But either way, those are the sort of trades that were going down. But some more significant ones were that the Browns have continued their process of just accumulating as many picks as they possibly can. You know, we talked, the Thursday crew and pod talked about the Mingo trade on the previous show, but they also traded cornerback Justin Gilbert to the Steelers within the division, which is interesting, for a sixth-round pick. And so they're continuing to stockpile those and get rid of basically all of their old veterans. They did keep all 14 of their drafted players in this draft, and they're having a few more next year. I honestly did not watch much Justin Gilbert, but Andrew, you are a scout, so what do you think of this?
Oh, I'm the scout? Am I getting paid for this? When it comes to Justin Gilbert, I guess I want to give you something. Because he didn't really give much to Cleveland, and it was the eighth overall pick of the draft 2 years ago, and there was literally not one thing he did well. And off the field, he had issues. A lot of people in the Browns organization didn't think he took football seriously enough. He couldn't cover. The one thing maybe he did well, I mean, he was good at he was able to return kicks and punts here and there. I can't really tell you 100% like how good he was, but I know he was good at that Oklahoma State. But maybe this is an issue of needs a fresh start. The Browns organization is, there's a lot to say about the Browns organization, but one thing to say is that their first round picks haven't exactly been fire over the past 5-6 years. I'm just going to name you all the first round picks since 2011 that the Browns have selected. All right, Phil Taylor, defensive tackle out of Baylor, who was a good player when healthy, but is now out of the league because he had neck issues. Trent Richardson, there's nothing that needs to be said there. Brandon Weeden, even less that needs to be said there. Barkevious Mingo, who we just mentioned, got traded to New England. Justin Gilbert, who we're talking about. Johnny Manziel. Danny Shelton, who had a really disappointing rookie year last year. He's come back in shape. He lost 30 pounds, and he looks to be faster off the ball. I wouldn't give up on him, but he's coming off a down year. Cameron Irving, who they just can't seem to find a position for him. I mean, he's playing center now to take over for Alex Mack, but those are big shoes to fill. And they took Corey Coleman this year, who I'm a fan of. But, like, that is a total of 9 first-round picks in the past 6 years. And they haven't hit on one. All right? So that tells you what you need to know about this organization. So back to my point, Gilbert's going to Pittsburgh, who desperately need cornerbacks. And maybe they'll be able to mold it into something Cleveland hasn't been able to. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time.
Given that track record of draft picks, I mean, maybe Cleveland should be trying to trade their draft picks away and get known quantities because they haven't really hit on any of the draft picks that they've been pulling. But,
well, that's definitely not what the regime is doing now. We just mentioned they kept all 14 guys.
To Nick's point, if that guy wasn't even going to make the team or, you know, had a chance of not making the team, it is kind of amazing that you get something for a guy that you're planning on cutting anyway. So maybe this is the beginning of a new Cleveland Browns era.
I think there's the one interesting thing also is that this is an in-division trade. You don't really see that very often. The last one that really comes to mind is the Donovan McNabb trade when the Eagles shipped him to Washington. And we saw that turned out for the Redskins. So I just thought that's an interesting anecdote as well. We'll see if Pittsburgh is able to turn Gilbert's career around.
Well, and one other situation that was in the news and that is actually one of the more interesting ones is the Packers cutting guard Josh Sitton, who is not a guy anyone thought they were going to be cutting around this time of year. In fact, he's been a stalwart there. And his first visit is in the division to the Chicago Bears. I know there's a lot of teams clamoring for this guy. I mean, I think the Chiefs have a jersey waiting for him, but Monty and Andrew, whichever one of you wants to chime in the fastest.
Anytime a big name like that gets passed, the first thing that you think of, or at least that I think of, is, what do they know that we don't know? Is there going to be a police report that's going to come out? Is there a suspension looming? Because it just doesn't make sense in a vacuum of why you would cut a former All-Pro when you don't have, first-round draft pick waiting in the wings to take over. I'd be very curious to hear from, the Packers super fan if he's heard anything or there's any concerns with his work ethic or something weird, because on the surface it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, apparently it was a contract issue. Sitton was very upset that he wasn't able to get a raise on his contract, and maybe Ted Thompson just didn't want to deal with a player, a disgruntled player, so they just let him go, which is pretty crazy because I have a stat here. Josh Sitton was the most efficient pass-blocking guard in the league last year. So what does that mean? That means that he had 609 pass-block snaps. In those 609 pass-block snaps, he only allowed 12 total pressures. 9 hurries, didn't allow the quarterback to get hit, except for the 3 sacks that he allowed. So, going play by play, this guy is a stud. And immediately the report came out from Charles Robinson of Yahoo that half the league contacted Josh Sitton after he got released. So, as a Jet fan, I would love to have this guy on my team, but with our cap issues, I don't know if we're going to be able to sign him. But he's a stud, and there's no way around it. There's definitely something else going on, and maybe the contract is what caused him to be released.
Could be. Well, if the Bears are able to snag him, it would be one of many moves they've made this weekend. It's been a busy time for them. Obviously, they need to fill a lot of holes up there in Chicago, and this preseason has not been kind to them in terms of what it's shown, in terms of where some of their problems lie. But among the guys they picked up off the waiver wire were Matt Barkley, former Cardinals and Eagles quarterback, also Logan Paulson, the Washington tight end, center Eric Kush, who's been just about the only interesting personality on Hard Knocks this year, and Craven LeBlanc. We'll see if these guys can help out, but the Bears look like they might be a bit of a mess this year.
Yeah, and just to jump on what you just said, the Bears were the first visit Josh Sitton made since his release, so that's why you ended up going there. Just for the sake of the segue, I feel you, Nick, as a former host. So, they picked up Kush, who actually played well this preseason. He's not just a meathead that you see on Hard Knocks. But so I'll be interested to see if he gets any playing time. I mean, that's kind of a lie, because I'll probably forget about him in like 3 days. But
well, one guy that that didn't go to a rival, but I know is a guy that you're hoping to keep potentially and get something out of, is Jason Morrow, who the Jets did cut and was picked up by Tennessee.
Yeah, so this I wouldn't call it exactly a surprise, because there have been whispers all offseason that the coaching staff isn't exactly thrilled with him. But I loved this guy coming out of Texas Tech. And he was big, fast, he could catch the ball, which apparently he lost the ability to do because he's just been dropping balls all offseason. But it's kind of interesting, because there's a lot of unpack here, because This is a guy who was picked by John Idzik, who is no longer the general manager of this team. That would be Mike Maccagnan. And Jim Amaro's rookie year was very promising. I mean, tight ends normally don't play well their rookie year, but he led all tight ends in his draft class in catches and receiving yards. And then the next year, with a new GM coming in, first you heard whispers that they weren't too high on Amaro. And then he goes down with a torn labrum and misses all of his second year. And now he comes into his third year, apparently lights up minicamp in shorts and without pads. And once the pads came on, he just wasn't able to perform. And it's not like the Jets have a great tight end on their roster right now. Their tight end depth chart is the worst in the league, which is another conversation to have, because Chan Gailey doesn't really use a tight end much, and they really use Quincy Enunwa as their tight end. But just for argument's sake, their tight ends right now are Kellen Davis and Brandon Bostic, and I know they picked up two guys off waivers today, so it's not like they didn't have a need there, So if Amaro couldn't crack that tight end depth chart, it's interesting to see how he's going to fare in Tennessee, who claimed him today. Delanie Walker is there, and he's one of the best tight ends in the league. it's going to be interesting to see what type of role Amaro has. I'm rooting for him because I was just for my credibility, I guess. I mean, but I really thought he was going to pan out, and it just didn't happen.
I was going to say that cut, and then I also thought that the cornerback, D. Milliner, he's a former first-rounder, too. I was kind of surprised the Jets let him go. What's the story with him?
So, thanks, host. I'll definitely get back to you on that. No, I'm kidding. With Milliner, that was less of a surprise. He's had plenty of shots, and plus he just couldn't stay healthy. I believe that no one picked him up on waivers, so the Jets just put him on the IR. He just can't play the ball in the air. It's such a weird thing. He's always in coverage. He's there, but he just can't turn his head and make a play on the ball. And it's frustrating to watch because the first week of the preseason against Jacksonville, people wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt because Allen Robinson made two ridiculous catches over him. But then I believe it was the second preseason game. He got beat. No, it was the third preseason game. Tavares King beat him on a corner route in the end zone where he got faked down on a double move. And then he missed the fourth preseason game with a hamstring injury. Just classic way to end his Jets career. And one of the biggest draft busts in the past couple of years, and as a Jet fan, it's not that surprising because it's happened before in the top 10. I'm just happy we were able to get Sheldon Richardson in that draft too, because if we redid that draft, he's probably the number one overall pick.
Well, just one last thing I wanted to say on the Jason Morrow move is just that, you mentioned Delanie Walker. They also have Anthony Fasano, who's like a pretty good catch and block tight end. And so he's going to, he'll be just sort of this spare part that they can see if they can get healthy and get him involved there. I think everybody's been really down on the Titans. Obviously, they had an awful year last year, but they have a lot of young, interesting talent on that offense, especially. Mariota's looked good so far in preseason. I think they're going to have some real firepower this year. I don't know if it's going to translate into a whole lot of wins because I think they still have a lot of defensive problems, but they're an interesting young team now.
I watched one game where the Raiders played and then just following them a little bit this preseason. I thought the running game from Tennessee looks like one of the best in the league. I know it's only preseason and there's still a lot to be proven, but DeMarco Murray looks solid. Derrick Henry looks really good. Like, that was one of my biggest, I guess, I wasn't expecting anything from the Titans going into 2016, and just what they've done in the preseason, that was kind of like the bigger surprise. It looks like they're going to be able to run the ball.
Well, one guy that they are not going to be counting on for offensive production this year is Justin Hunter. They waived him, and he was picked up by the Dolphins, and I think he's going to be yet another wide receiver that the Dolphins misuse. I mean, we'll see. I mean, I think Adam Gase probably has some better ideas for a lot of these guys, but to me, Hunter was a dude who came out of nowhere, had one amazing season, and then just anybody who plays fantasy has hated him ever since. I don't really know what else he might have left in the tank. It seems like he was also a guy where the real issues were not physical, but it was a lot of sort of off-the-field focus and dedication sort of questions.
I don't even remember him having an amazing season. He must have had like a couple games or some flashes or something. I just remember people always talking about this guy, but he's just never really amounted to anything. So I don't know. I mean, we can talk to Ron, but I can't imagine the Dolphins fans are all that excited about Justin.
Well, on his career, he has 68 catches, 1,168 yards, and 8 touchdowns. And he was a second-round pick in 2014. So that, to me, says he's had some highlights, but has never been a dependable option, really.
So with Hunter, he was a size-speed guy coming out of Tennessee who a lot of people liked. And he showed flashes in his first year, catching a lot of red zone targets, out-jumping people. Typical Titans big receiver, like Dorial Green-Beckham, same guy. But he just couldn't seem to put it all together, and now he's in Miami with a lot of guys on that depth chart, a lot of talented guys. But the thing that interests me is that, what does it say about Devontae Parker? Because Devontae Parker has been hurt most of his rookie year and is hurt now and might not be ready for the season. And the coaches came out and sort of criticized him for it. They were like, listen, he's got to take care of himself off the field. He's not taking care of himself. And that depth chart, there are a lot of guys to climb. Kenny Stills has had a very interesting preseason. Maybe the Dolphins are finally going to use him the right way, be able to hit him down the field. Jarvis Landry is the number one target out of the slot. They took Leonte Carew in the third round, who they traded up for and gave up a third and a fourth round pick to Minnesota to trade up and get. And Jakeem Grant was a guy that was very interesting to watch. I mean, I keep saying interesting, but it's interesting. What can I say? I'm sorry. They have receivers that should be able to do damage, and I don't know if Hunter is going to have an impact. I think it really depends on if Parker's healthy or not.
All right, well, that brings us to a couple of quarterback moves where the Bengals claimed quarterback Jeff Driskel off of the 49ers, and Mark Sanchez was cut and ended up in Dallas. Obviously, neither of these teams are hoping either of these guys start, but when it comes to the 49ers, their quarterback situation is one of the weirder and more interesting ones for a lot of reasons. But honestly, I mean, I thought in the little bit of 49ers that I watched this preseason, Christian Ponder, who they also basically picked up off the street this year, I mean, he looked by far like the steadiest quarterback that they had. They appeared they want to be rolling with Blaine Gabbert and keep paying Kaepernick to sit in a lot of ways. But
was that a joke?
It may have been. But yeah, so they add Driskel to the mix, and I bet Dallas fans are just hoping that Sanchez never actually throws the ball during regulation.
Well, Nick, I think you're going to have something to say about this Sanchez thing, because there's been accusations of tampering with Mark Sanchez and the Cowboys, and the Cowboys might lose a draft pick, very much like the Chiefs lost a draft pick with the Jeremy Maca situation. So it's going to be interesting to see, because literally there was a report that Sanchez was released on Twitter, and 10 minutes later there's a report that he's signing with Dallas. And I don't know about you, but logistically that doesn't really sound very possible. But we're going to see what happens. Apparently Denver did give the Cowboys permission to talk to Sanchez when they were talking trade, but maybe they said, listen, we're not going to trade for you. They're going to release you, and then we'll sign you. It's going to be interesting to see what happens there with Roger Goodell and what arbitrary punishment he decides to hand out next.
Yeah, what is the going rate for tampering, cheating these days, Nick?
Apparently a third and a bunch of fines. So, yeah, I mean, I would at least hope that if they're going to enforce dumb rules that they be consistent about it. But it's one of those where it just obviously doesn't work the way they think it's going to work. I mean, like, you know, in the Macklin situation, the problem was not that the Chiefs had contact with his agent, but that Reed and Macklin spoke on the phone before, while Macklin still was, it was before, I guess, the official tampering period where you're allowed to do that. I honestly don't know what the difference is between a coach talking to an agent or the player directly. I mean, if these guys are so naive to be swept off their feet by the sultry tones of Andy Reid on the phone, that an agent and his professional advice might be able to avoid. But the fact is that Macklin and Reid are actually, like, legit friends. So, anyway, so, like, what, they're supposed to just not talk? Whatever. And it sounds like this is a similarly absurd situation to enforce it in this way on. If they're already talking about trade, do you expect them to not even bring up the possibility, which is actually a high probability, that he's just going to be cut? And if case, like, do you not say, like, well, we're trying to trade for you, so if you're cut, obviously we're interested. Like, I mean, is that the crime? Obviously, I still have a little bit of bitterness from the Macklin penalty. It just seems like this is a rule that they enforce it randomly whenever they, like, it's something obvious occurs that might be a violation of the rule, but it's something that's probably going on constantly.
Yeah, for sure.
Moving on to a different position group, which is the running back position. There were a couple of moves here in that Ronnie Hillman was released by the Denver Broncos, causing a lot of fantasy owners to pull their hair out. And the Chargers picked up off waivers former Giants running back Andre Williams. The Chargers are interesting just because I think they, although, you know, Melvin Gordon showed some things in preseason, it's still a fairly big question mark there in their running back position. I mean, you have Danny Woodhead was their more productive guy last year. So Andre Williams perhaps gives them a little bit more of a presence in the run game. I don't know. Either way.
No. No, he doesn't.
If anything, jump on in.
Yeah. I will. And I have been. But when it comes to Andre Williams, he's probably the least talented running back in all of football. He literally runs into blocks. Like, he doesn't run through blocks. He runs into the blockers and he falls down. He's never hear, like, the term 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Like, Andre Williams won't even get you the cloud of dust. Like, he'll get you the 3 yards and that's it. And it's probably good news for Melvin Gordon, honestly, because Andre Williams isn't going to push him. And with Hillman, Like he's kind of a disappointment. He's a talented guy, but it seems like he didn't make the roster because he was going to be the third running back behind C.J. Anderson and Devontae Booker. And if you're the third running back on a team, you need to be able to play special teams. And his body type isn't that type of player. And he wasn't able to beat out Capri Bibbs, which is a name that I could just keep saying on and on and on. And Capri Bibbs beat him out. And Capri Bibbs might be making an impact on special teams this year. And you might be hearing his name called a lot by Phil Simms and anyone else who's calling the games, Capri Bibbs.
I had Hillman on a fantasy team, and he's dead to me. I don't care where he lands. He's dead to me. The other name that I thought, did Bishop think he could pick up?
Yeah, the Patriots. The Patriots picked him up. And it's funny because we were just saying Andre Williams on the least talented backs. It's fun. Bishop Sankey was the first running back taken in that 2014 draft, but he just showed absolutely nothing. Like, absolutely nothing. Like, no explosiveness. Wasn't a great receiver out of the backfield. Couldn't really pass block. I guess New England's going to try and make something out of him, and of course it wouldn't be a shock. You're talking to the Jets fan right here. You're like, nothing shocks me with that.
Yeah, he's gotten a lot of success out of some mediocre running back play, so getting the number one running back taken in the draft, it wouldn't be shocking if he actually produced a little bit this year. Kind of a good pickup by the evil empire.
I don't think so, but whatever.
A low-risk one anyway. It's sort of like their constant churn of oft-injured white receivers that are cut off of other teams. I mean, a few of those have worked out, obviously.
Well, yeah.
It's kind of amazing how often like that is the profile of the guy that they're bringing in on cut day before the season. Moving to injury news on a couple of teams, the Bengals, who we mentioned before, they placed running back and, more importantly, first-round cornerback William Jackson III on injured reserve. And the Steelers also put former first-round pick Brad Dupree on injured reserve as well.
That's Bud Dupree to you, buddy.
Bud Dupree. Thank you.
So Dupree's a guy that is kind of a polarizing prospect coming out of Kentucky. The advanced stats didn't really like him very much. He didn't create much pressure. He's more of a projection guy. And he had a kind of disappointing rookie year last year, and he was expected to make a jump this year, which the Steelers desperately needed because they're still counting on James Harrison and another guy, Jarvis Jones, who has been a bust so far at outside linebacker. And it's possible Dupree comes back with this new IR designation rule that's been implemented this year. And they might be able to bring him back, but we're not going to know until at least week 9.
You can correct me if I'm wrong, though, for that IR rule. In order to be placed on the designation to come back, don't you have to make the 53-man roster and then put on IR after the fact?
Yes, so exactly. That's why they did that today.
That happened today. Okay,
yeah.
When I read the news, I thought maybe Bud was out for the whole year. And I'm honestly, this Steelers defense is like Ryan Shazier and James Harrison and a bunch of guys that I guess usually expect to see a lot of all pros on that defense, and I just don't get that.
I mean, their defensive line has two studs. I mean, one of them, Cameron Hayward, is going to be out the first couple of weeks also, which is something we should mention. But Stephon Tuitt, you're going to hear a lot about this guy this year. He, coming out of Notre Dame in his second year? This might be his third year. But he's a guy who could rush the passer and defend the run and penetrate into the backfield. But yeah, I agree with you. And their secondary has a lot of holes. I'm not as high as the Steelers as everybody else is. Also, because their left tackle is a guy named Alejandro Villanueva, who sounds more like a Spanish soap opera star than he does an NFL left tackle.
But our Steelers superfan Greg actually really likes him. He was perplexed at your lack of respect for him.
Okay.
Greg likes everyone who puts on that Steelers helmet. As soon as they sign, he's got them going to the Hall of Fame. Loves all those guys.
Well, speaking of which, and actually speaking of the defense, there's a couple of other small moves involving, in one case, a player from your team there, Monty, is the Colts added a couple of guys, and that's a defense that is sorely needing some work. They picked up cornerback Nico Thorpe off waivers from the Raiders and safety Matthias Fairley off waivers from the Cardinals. They also cut a bunch of guys, and they're expected to be without Vontae Davis for several weeks, so you know, the Colts are going to continue to be a mess, and I think they're going to keep churning guys. But is Nico Thorpe going to give them anything there, Monty?
Yeah, I mean, he started a few games for the Raiders, and he is, you know, like a below-average cornerback. I kind of wanted him to make the practice squad or the 53-man roster just for a little bit of depth because he does have some experience. But, yeah, I mean, signs are not positive if you are shopping in the bargain bin week before kickoff trying to find players that are going to actually contribute to your team. I'm a big Andrew Luck fan. I think he's good when healthy, and I kind of want to see him develop. But, boy, it does not look like the Colts defense is going to give him much wiggle room this year.
Yeah, and if we're talking about these two guys, it's probably time to go. But I do like Mathias Fairley. He did flash at the beginning of the preseason. Maybe it's just a deep safety depth chart there in Arizona. And he definitely could help a team like Indianapolis, which is probably the least talent of any team in football outside of quarterback and wide receiver.
Well, one other guy who is out there and available for them, if they're basically taking all comers, is Raheem Moore, who was also released from the Browns because the Browns just don't want any veterans this year.
I liked him coming out of college. He played at UCLA. He played well first couple of years with Denver. You probably remember him in that game against the Ravens in the playoff game where he let, I believe, Jacoby Jones get behind him on a bomb by Joe Flacco and the go-ahead touchdown. And he hasn't really recovered since that play. I mean, he played with the Texans last year. Obviously, he's not on that team anymore, and now didn't even make it to final cuts. So, he's only 26, but he's going to have trouble finding work right now.
All right, just a couple other quick ones, and it's a mixed.
Can I mention one? Since we just did those three guys, and like I,
sure.
But yeah, the one that really sticks out to me is Arthur Brown, he was a second round pick out of Kansas State from the Ravens a couple years ago, and a lot of guys liked him in the drafting community. People thought his projection to cover was going to pan out, and that he was very active in the running game. But he's a much better fit in the 4-3 than he is in the 3-4, and he was playing in the 3-4 next to C.J. Mosley, or at least attempting to, over the first couple years of his career. But now he's in Jacksonville, and I couldn't love the fit anymore. Like, with all those young linebackers there, I could see him flying around and making an impact this year.
All right, so some rapid-fire ones that slipped through the cracks here. The Broncos had another veteran quarterback in Austin Davis. Also, you mentioned the Ravens. They picked up immortal returner man Devin Hester, but also cut Justin Forsett. Meanwhile, the Vikings stashed away on their practice squad Beringer, the supposedly amazing German super athlete at wide receiver, and their awesomely named lineman who they picked, I think, in the fourth round, Willie Beaver.
Beavers.
Willie Beaver. The Forsett cut was a little bit surprising. He had a pretty solid year last year. I know Terrence West was coming on a little bit in preseason, but I mean,
yeah.
Everyone other than the rookie just seems like just a guy, but at least Forsett showed that he could do it last year. I was kind of surprised they let him go.
Right, so that's probably something, because I would have been surprised to see him back in Baltimore, first off, because they have three guys there in Terrence West, who you just mentioned, who's looked really good this preseason. I think he's going to be the main back all year. Or at least until Kenneth Dixon comes back, who's a fourth-round pick out of Louisiana Tech, who sprained his knee in the second preseason game. But he's looked good in by all reports in OTAs and training camp and in preseason. And who's Buck Allen, who is one of the better receiving backs in the league. So if they cut one of those guys, they would have been subjected to waivers. And while Forsett goes right to free agency, which means they might be able to bring him back. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, Forsett had a very good year 2 years ago, and he was competent last year. So he's a guy that he's probably like the replacement level running back in the NFL, but he's going to find work.
I mean, you can keep four running backs rather on your roster. The Chiefs did that. I mean, one of the more surprising things out of the Chiefs was just the fact that they kept Nile Davis, who's really better as a returner than a running back, but is okay. I mean, I think he could start for probably some teams as their fourth running back, and they have a fullback, so that's five backs. It's a bit unusual, but it is possible.
Right, but what does that really say about Jamaal Charles? Because the reports are coming out that Charles might not even be ready week one, and he's definitely not going to get the full load. And Charkendrick West is still a little bit banged up, but I love Spencer Ware. I really think he might even be the best running back on the team at this point Charles' injury, so...
This is just the first example of when Todd Vader falls in love with your team, this is the kind of stuff that starts happening. So this This is the first domino to fall, Nick.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, actually, because, I mean, yeah, there have been these, like, reports drifting out, but to me, none of them are surprising at all. I mean, they've brought him back super slow from the ACL, basically because they don't need to do anything other than that. We saw how well both Spencer Ware and Tre'Kendrick West picked up load when he was out, you know, for most of last season. And now, I mean, like you said, Andrew, I mean, I think his role on the team is going to be different. I hope he's fully back from the ACL. He's come back from an ACL before and been fine. But I think he might even be basically like the best third down back in the league this year. Because you have Spencer Ware to run the rock and, you know, early downs. He can be the kind of the grinder in the second half of games when you're ahead and just sort of killing clock. West sort of does everything okay. And then you have Nile Davis, who's a great special teamer and, you know, is still an okay running back. So you can use Jamaal Charles as much or as little as you want to. And there's just zero reason to rush him back if he's like 95%. The other big thing is that the Chiefs have actually never had Jamaal Charles really in a playoff game. When they were in the playoffs in 2010, was like the last time that basically he made the only impact in that game with like a long touchdown run, and they got demolished by the Ravens. And then in 2013, when they had their blowout loss, well, not blowout, the horrible defensive collapse against the Colts, he went out with a concussion in like the first quarter of that game. And then this year, when we were in the playoffs again, he was out. And so what a lot of Chiefs fans have been saying is essentially like, you know, we don't really need him. We don't need to rush him back for anything. I mean, we can give him as light of a load as we need early on, because it would actually be sort of nice to have Jamaal Charles in a playoff game for once.
Assuming your Chiefs make it to the playoffs. Let's not get
ahead of that. You beat me to it. You beat me to it.
Yeah, that is true. That is assuming that. But, you know, I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, if the Chiefs are able to hold things together without Justin Houston, without Charles having a heavy load, those guys are going to be coming back healthy and fresh in the latter half of the season. So, I mean, I'm not saying that's a positive for them that they have these lingering injuries, but it's not something that really concerns me too much. But talking, you know, team-wide now, since we have just a little bit of time, we haven't gone our usual... are unfortunately common 2-hour-long marathons. But I just wanted you guys to each give me one team that, based on whatever little moves or whatever things have happened in the preseason and what you've seen on the field for them, that has really changed your opinion about that team, for either for positive or for negative. And you can't say your own team. But what, you know, give me one team that has sort of stood out and like, huh, I was a bit off base with where I had them, you know, I guess a few weeks ago, when we were still in the darkness of the, you know, the really, really slow part of the offseason. Starting with you, Monty.
Well, the two teams that jumped off the page, I kind of already brought up the Titans, but the only other team that kind of surprised me, and maybe it's because I had so little expectations for RG3 and Josh Gordon and the last quarterback that Al Davis ever drafted, Terrell Pryor, but I'm not expecting it to show up in the win-loss column, but I think that Hugh Jackson's going to be able to, you know, move the ball and put up some points on offense. They're going to go for like the big play hit, and you know, I think they're going to be kind of fun to watch. And I don't think I've thought that way about the Browns for quite some time. So I'm kind of pulling for Hugh and Terrell Pryor.
Yeah. So kind of took a couple of my teams. Tennessee was definitely one of them, and Cleveland, it's just at a lower level. Just yeah, they're not making the playoffs, but their offense might be fun to watch. Houston's another team that, I mean, I'm still not an Osweiler guy, but the way Jadeveon Clowney's been playing this preseason gives me hope that their defense is going to be able to at least be as good as they were last year. But since Monty went with the positive team, I'm going to go with a team that I'm not as high on as I was a couple of weeks ago, and that's Atlanta Falcons. I was never crazy high on them. I thought they were like a middle of the pack team, but I could very well see them becoming last in this division. I like what they did with the young linebackers, with Deion Jones and Devondre Campbell. They're going to be faster on defense, but they can't rush the passer. Vic Beasley came out after the game against the preseason game against the Dolphins and said, it's a problem. We can't rush the passer. And obviously, you need to rush the passer in this day and age. No matter how good Desmond Trufant is on the outside, shout out to Tim. But and then Matt Ryan does not look like the same guy. I mean, even last year he was off. He kept turning the ball over, but his arm strength—it looks like he lost arm strength. He doesn't look like he's confident. I hesitate to say this because this is like one of the worst things you can say about the quarterback, but I really think he might have caught some Matt Schaub syndrome. And guess who just happens to be the backup quarterback of this Atlanta Falcons team?
Well, you mentioned the Matt Schaub syndrome, and the guy who I think might be catching a bit of that is, since both of you guys named two teams, I'll give you two as well. The team that I'm kind of surprisingly down on is the Cardinals, and it's just simply because of that one position with Carson Palmer. Granted, it's the preseason, but the last thing we saw of him was a dreadful playoff performance, and it's been a bit of a media narrative, like, oh, is that going to, you know, sort of weigh on their minds going into the season, that big collapse, and all of that. But man, I mean, Carson Palmer sure has reinforced the notion that that's a problem. I mean, he's thrown some bad picks in preseason, at least a couple of pick sixes. And what's even worse is that every single quarterback behind him on that depth chart has looked worse than him, possibly. I mean, so they look like they may be dealing with a Carson Palmer that's either getting Matt Schaub syndrome or perhaps Peyton Manning syndrome going into this year, and they have nothing behind him. So with as talented as that team is, that's got to be extremely concerning. It's one of those things where I think we had them, you know, everyone was talking about them as being like a lock to at least appear in the NFC Championship game. But man, that's really going to be something to watch this year. But a team that I'm high on, you guys mentioned the Titans. A very similar team to me is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, in that they have their young quarterback really seeming to turn a corner. I only watched a bit of their, a couple of their games, but they have just weapons galore. And Jameis Winston, I mean, he's showing that he has like a full repertoire of throws, and he's making good decisions, and I think they'll be able to score points on people. I'm not sure how well their defense is going to hold up, but I'm a lot higher on them in a division that's extremely top-heavy, you know, to be able to make some noise possibly this year.
They've got good pieces on defense, too. Was it David? Who's their linebacker? Lamonte David. That guy.
Yeah, and the guy that they picked in the first round, the cornerback out of Florida with 11th overall pick, Vernon Hargreaves, has been one of the, if not the most defensive, impressive defensive rookie so far. And, yeah, I like that team. My question would be their offensive line. Donovan Smith, second-round pick out of Penn State last year, just was a dumpster fire last year at left tackle. And the Ali Marpet, who's a small school guy, I think Hobart, which I'm not even sure, sounds more like a rival school of Hogwarts than it does of an actual college. But like he's in the second year. I like him, but their right tackle, DeMar Dotson, is coming off a knee surgery. And he hasn't looked the same so far this preseason. And J.R. Sweezy, the left guard they got from Seattle, is on the PUP list with a back injury. So they're going to need to keep Jameis clean in order for that offense to live up to expectations. And then they need guys like Noah Spence and Robert Ayers to provide the pass rush, the exterior pass rush, the outside pass rush that Gerald McCoy isn't really able to give them because he's too busy wrecking things up on the inside.
Good stuff. Well, all great things must come to an end, and such is the case with this particular podcast. If this has been one of the first times you've been listening to us, or you're looking for new ways to discover us, by far the best way to get our podcast is just by subscribing to us on iTunes, and also, while you're there, go ahead and rate and review us. It really helps other people find the show, just having a few more ratings, a few more reviews on there. Our hate mail service, and also our compliments box, our questions box, is all in the same place. It is nextfanup@gmail.com. You can listen to all of our podcasts all the way going back to the very beginning, streaming on blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. You can see our write-ups. We do have fans of all 32 teams, although there are a couple of vacancies. Actually all 30 teams that matter. We are looking for a Lions superfan and I believe a Titans superfan. Either way,
Buccaneers.
Although Titans have been fairly quiet as well. If you haven't heard your superfan on in a while, go ahead and send in an application. Tell us why you should be a superfan on the Next Fan Up podcast to nextfanup@gmail.com. And again, so we have our fans previewing and recapping all the games, sending in all sorts of other little tidbits. We post all of that on our Facebook page, which you can find just by typing a Knicks Fan Up into the Facebook search bar. And we are pretty prolific tweeters, individually and as a group, at NFU Podcast on Twitter. And if anyone wants to hear more about the Raiders and their up-and-coming season, Monty, where can they find that?
My Twitter handle is at Montsadius, but if you tweet at Knicks Fans Up, I will find I'll find a way to get back to you.
All right, go Saints. And Bengals fans that want to start the early trash talk with your very own Andrew, the Jets super
your very fan, own yeah. Andrew.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm selling you now. you can find that and all of your other new content where, Andrew?
You could, if you want to hear more about the Jets, you could go over to GangreneNation.com, which is the SB Nation affiliate. There's a Locked On Jets podcast that we just started up. I haven't been on it yet, but I'm semi-involved in that, so if you want to hear more about the Jets. And check out Bleacher Report. I'm doing some work for Bleacher Report this year. Nothing that you're going to see my name on, but just know if there's anything that you don't like out there, I was probably something to do with it. So, yeah.
All of the bad Chiefs opinions I pretty much attribute to you and your influence in the interwebs.
Yeah, I try my best. It gives me purpose.
All right. Well, tune in. We are going to have more content coming at you with a show on Wednesday and Thursday. Both of those will be steered by the steady and experienced hand of your very own Pod Vader, to use that expression again, of four-letter network fame. Without further ado, I believe this thing is closed. There you have it. And in the immortal words of Jeff Fisher.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.